Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Rockies Insider with Patrick Lyons. We got Manny Randau here of MLB.com. We did get news on Thursday, opening day 2025. We actually know where the Rockies are going to play, more specifically than just the Tampa area.
Right.
Tampa Bay Rays announced that the entire 2025 regular season will be played at George M. Steinbrenner Field in Tampa, the spring training home of the New York Yankees and the low A home of the Florida League's Tampa Tarpons. So the Tarpons will play on a backfield whenever the Rays are home. So now we do know. You don't have to change your flights. You can still go to Tampa. But now tickets are going to be a little bit more harder to come by with capacity at only about 11,000.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? Because now we got the A's going to Sacramento, and then we got the Rays that are going to be playing in a spring training facility. So it's challenging, right? It's going to be challenging for both clubs, just given what happened. Obviously, people saw what happened with the hurricane destroyed at least the roof. I'm not sure how much inside was damaged, but the roof of Tropicana Field is just ripped off, basically. And so now the Rays are forced to play elsewhere. Like you said, it's going to be a lot. It's the capacity is going to be, three or four times smaller. So it's going to definitely be harder to get tickets. So if anybody wants to get tickets to see the Rockies on opening day, they probably should jump on that pretty soon, because they just announced it officially this morning. But I'm not sure the logistics of that in terms of tickets right now. But if you want to go, you probably should jump on it early.
One of the issues I think they were having is just in general, the concept that, look, it rains in Tampa, so you need a dome. So they're not going to have one now.
Yeah, yeah.
They still need a place to play in 2026 and 2027 before the new field gets built, assuming that it is on time and we don't add another new stadium to a Safeco and whatnot, Rogers Center. So maybe they do leave the roof off of Tropicana Field for those 2 years, and then they
I guess it depends on how, just the mechanics of how you're going to fix the place. I don't know. It's pretty old. I don't know how challenging it's going to be to fix it. So are you going to just play? You'd think maybe they will just play without a roof, for a while, because putting a roof, capping that thing again, I don't know how easy that can be given the way it's structured and how old it is.
As you mentioned, Tropicana Field being old, 1990 was when it built, so actually older than Coors Field. And because both Oakland Coliseum, 1966, and Tropicana Field, 1990, are now off the mat, that does mean Coors Field will be the 10th oldest ballpark for the 2025 season.
Amazing, right? And it looks brand new.
Oh, it's so amazing. Nice.
It looks great. It looks better than it. I think it looks better than it did even in when it opened. It's pretty amazing.
Well, especially when you see some of those old videos of like Larry Walker in the mid to late 90s and center field, the batter's eye, the trees, either there's nothing there or you got these little tiny saplings. Now it's over, not overgrown.
It's a forest.
Not in a bad way. It's a forest. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Yep.
And I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think we had the incident that we have every single year where someone from the visiting bullpen think that happened this year. This is like the first time.
I don't think so either. Like somebody's always, sitting there in the forest watching the game from one of the relievers always goes out there, right?
Always.
So yeah, I'm trying to think who.
I'm trying to think
if anybody did that last year, but I can't think of one. So maybe it didn't happen.
Maybe
the Rockies should. When's the last time the Rockies did it? The Rockies should just.
Oh, they know better. They know better. They could have gotten away with it, obviously, with the Green City Connects if they wanted to.
That's true. It's camouflage.
Good buddy Justin Wick, now working for the Sacramento Rivercats, pointing out also, hadn't thought of this, Oakland Coliseum, Tropicana Field off the map, which means 2025 will, I guess, be the first time ever we won't have bullpens on the playing field.
Oh,
those are the last two.
That's a great call.
Justin Wick, of course, he pays attention.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good call. That's true and great. You know, that's great. I mean, it creates more safety for the players. It's obviously better to have the bullpens out of play. You know, I mean, it just doesn't make sense in this day and age to have those kinds of obstacles. I mean, like Towels Hill, it's like, what was the point of that? Like, I still don't know why, whose idea that was and why.
It was Towels' idea.
It was Towels' idea. So, yeah, I mean, if you're going to get named after you, you might as well. But, like, it just creates a hazard, you know. Why would we want to go back to the 1950s with, like, the monuments in play at Yankee Stadium and stuff like that? Doesn't seem to make sense, especially given how much is invested in these guys now.
It's probably no surprise that our good buddy Thomas Harding, I think, wishes the monuments were still in play. I kind of remember him mentioning that this last, you know, as he does, as we all do, kind of repeat ourselves over and over again. I feel like he likes that.
Well, I remember talking to for the Lake Street Bombers book. I remember talking to John Miller because he was the play-by-play guy for the first game at Coors Field, and he said I was seriously suggesting that they just create a polo ground situation at Denver at Coors. I think only John Miller would think of something like that. Like, that's because he's like, you know, just, you know, lean into it. You know, if it's going to be hard to hit, if it's going to be easy to hit it out here, just make it impossible to hit it out here, you know,
and leave the trees out and leave the water fixture, you
leave
know,
everything in the way.
Soggy baseball into second base. Why
a lot
not?
Of inside the Parkers. Yeah.
That's a whole other concept of like, all right, what if new rule in the MLB, just take the fences down and it creates some kind of steps. If you had to play out every single baseball, I mean, if it goes in the stands, it's the stands, it's in there. But if you could possibly keep a guy to a triple for a ball that goes into the trees in center field, I mean, Brent Doyle could track that ball down. Think of the plays Doyle could make in center field if there was no wall there. Climbing up a tree.
What if he climbed up the tree? Yeah. What if he climbed up the tree? You know?
Oh my
God.
That'd
be incredible, right?
Yeah, he'd have like 35 outs above average in the month of April with some of those plays.
He's not afraid to go get it, man. We've seen it. I still think they should have put a chalk outline on the wall with his pose when he caught that ball, when he knocked a dent into the fence in center field.
They still didn't fix that. Yeah. That was not fixed. Also, I want to mention this because, again, there's always new listeners every day, and sometimes it takes people two or three times to hear it. But I feel like I mention it every few months. In center field, so you mentioned Towels Hill at Minute Maid Park. In Albuquerque, they had Tope Slope, they called it, right? And they had that curved slope.
Yep.
It also had one other nickname. I don't know if you know, but it was taken from the manager of the Isotopes for a while in AAA. He was on the Rockies coaching staff for a while. But one of the secret nicknames of Tope Slope was also Glen Allen Hill, which that's I think true. Is a great name. Come on.
That's, you know what? That should be the official name. Like, they should just make that the official name. Glen Allen Hill. That's awesome.
Let's retroactively do that. Yes.
That is awesome. They should also, didn't Glen Allen Hill hit the roof across from Wrigley Field out in left field one time?
Yeah. And
I think he did, right? They should put something up there, like a little sign, Glen Allen Hill or something.
I think he also fell out of bed because he was having a dream about spiders, but that's
cut himself up. Yeah,
neither here nor there. All right, let's
talk about that large, a man that large and intimidating and with that kind of presence to be scared of anything is remarkable.
The itsy bitsy spider came down the water spout, and Glen Allen Hill went on the 15-day IL. All right, let's talk about the Hall of Fame.
It was a DL back then, but yeah, IL.
That's true. Let's talk about the Hall of Fame. We'll try to keep this conversation down to about 3 hours, okay?
Okay.
You and I,
that's good. I was wondering if we were going to cap it at something.
We were, the 3 hour mark is what we'll do. But from this point, so it'll be a 3.5 hour pod. Veterans Committee is going to meet down in Dallas Sunday, December 8th is when the announcement gets made by MLB Network. We've got 8 names from this classic baseball era committee. So it's candidates whose most significant career impact was realized prior to 1980. You still need to get 75% of the ballots cast for you. So 12 of the 16, if you get in, you get that 75%, you get inducted next summer, July 27th, 2025, along with any electees that emerge from the 2025 BBWAA election. We've got Dick Allen, Ken Boyer, John Donaldson, Steve Garvey, Vic Harris, Tommy John, Dave Parker, Louis Tion. Any of those just right off the bat to you jump out as a Hall of Famer?
Dick Allen should have been in the Hall of Fame a long time ago. I mean, this guy, I had a note here. There are five guys in MLB history who had a career baseball reference WAR over 58 and a career OPS plus over 156 who are not in the Hall of Fame. Their names are Barry Bonds, Mike Trout, Shoeless Joe Jackson, and Mark McGuire and Dick Allen. That's it.
Wow.
So the fact that he's not in the Hall of Fame, it's egregious, really. The dude, I mean, and the fact that he got 18.9% of the vote, was a high that his high watermark for BBWAA. He has been on the Veterans Committee before. He got 68.8% both times, 2015 and 2022. But you know, it's long overdue. That guy is a Hall of Famer. I mean, I think one of the things that, you know, there are two things I think that have kept him out, and they're both unfair. One is, I think like some writers just didn't like him, which is like, I don't care. I don't know anything about Dick Allen outside of, you know, some highlights in the numbers, but no matter who it is, your job is to put in the guy if he belongs in the Hall of Fame. And this guy absolutely belongs in the Hall of Fame. And secondly, his career was relatively short. I think he only played for like 11 seasons or something like that. But he was the 1964 NL Rookie of the Year with the Phillies, 1972 AL MVP with the White Sox. He was one of the great hitters of that generation. And so he absolutely belongs in there. I think that's the one that jumps out at me the most. There are some guys that I think are borderline and, you know, could be Hall of Famers. Ken Boyer, 5 gold gloves at third base, 11 time All-Star, 1964 NL MVP, about 63 BWAR. His high was 25.5% by BBWAA. I think he deserves a real hard look. Steve Garvey.
And to your point, to go back to that, so 5 gold glove awards at third base. Jose Ramirez just won his 5th, and we all know how revered he is. 11 All-Star game selections. Right now, there's only one active player in baseball that has been selected the All-Star game 11 times, Mike Trout.
There you go.
Right after that, you got Clayton Kershaw 10.
He's got a lot of the old school accolades down, you know. I think that he's definitely one guy that, you know, deserves a real hard look. Steve Garvey, who just lost an election, like, what was he, running for Senate or something? He's got a lot of the old school accolades too. 1974 NL MVP, 10-time All-Star, 2-time All-Star Game MVP, 4-time Gold Glove, 2-time NLCS MVP, 1981 World Series champ. But the sabermetrics are not on his side at all, really. He 117 OPS plus over 19 seasons, 272 home runs. So a lot of the kind of the milestone numbers that some people look for aren't there. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. He's got a lot of those kind of accolades that suggest that he is. There are a couple of Negro League stars that I think are Hall of Famers. And there's Vic Harris and there's John Donaldson. John Donaldson, like I said, Dick Allen was the only one. Actually, John Donaldson, who was called John, you know, quote unquote famous Donaldson, that was his nickname, famous, because he was like Satchel Paige before Satchel Paige. And by some estimates, I know people like wins, I'm not one of them, but by some estimates, he won 413 games at a pro level. 5,091 strikeouts, pitched in parts of some, you know, I don't know if this is apocryphal or if this is really true, 42 seasons. He was pitching at the age of 58. John Donaldson, I think, is absolutely a Hall of Famer. Vic Harris, not as a slam dunk of a case, but he was a really great Negro Leagues player as well. Career 814 OPS, 25 seasons as a player. Was a great manager too. So that's what might really push him in, is that he won 6 Negro National League pennants. And the last Negro Leagues World Series was 1948. And his team, the Homestead Grays, with one Willie Mays in center field, won that. So,
It's funny. So, the Negro League players are such a unique case. And I think John Donaldson definitely, I think, is a no doubter. He was a player that I can remember 10, 15 years ago, you know, so a lot of research being done on his behalf and uncovered, you know, all of these interesting statistics. And there were very few detractors, but they made a great case when the Negro Leagues were considered a part of the majors, right? And you go, well, why would that be a bad thing? Like, people should learn more about these players on Baseball Reference. And I think it is definitely way more positive than it is negative. But as you just said, running through some of those numbers, especially when it comes to someone like a John Donaldson who played for, you know, close to 40 years, whatever it was, and, you know, had, depending on which website you might use, reportedly 420 wins, over 5,000 strikeouts. But if you go on Baseball Reference, it shows them as having 69 career strikeouts and winning only six games.
That's the hard part.
But the reason is because those are the only official Negro Records. League games in which there were box scores. So there's some box scores that are missing, and a lot of what, you know, the games that he played, which were the only ones that were available to him at that time. Keep in mind, it wasn't as if he was just, hey, I want to go barnstorming and I want to make a couple bucks over here, some of there in these exhibitions and maybe play against town.
I mean, this guy was born in 18. Option. I think this guy was born in like 1890, you know, like 1881. So yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I don't know if anybody's seen the movie Fences with Denzel Washington. It's really good. It's about it's not based on a true story, but it's based on a play, I think. And Denzel plays a former Negro Leagues pitcher. He was a former Negro Leagues slugger who was like Josh Gibson good. But it was all before, you know, before the major leagues integrated. And so he never really got his chance to show it. There are a lot of players who never even got their chance to show it in a lot of the Negro League games. You know what I mean? Like before the Negro National Leagues began, this guy was already, you know, doing his thing. And so I think he even may have been kind of a mentor to Satchel Paige. This is a guy that I think absolutely deserves to be in. It's really unfortunate that records with records being so difficult to come by with the Negro Leagues, that it's just, like you said, there's such a disparity between what we know but don't know and what's in the records. And that's too bad. But shouldn't stop. I don't think, with Kendrick, Mr. Kendrick in Kansas City, right? The Negro Leagues Museum.
Bob Kendrick,
Bob Kendrick, he's doing a great job of really, he has done a great job over many years of kind of bringing to the baseball world's attention how good a lot of these guys were. And that's a hard thing to do when you don't have all the box scores, right? It's just, you're kind of piecing things together. For you to be able to piece things together to the point where it's legit and you can say, yes, this guy, we have eyewitnesses, we have our eyewitness accounts, and we have all this other stuff, then yeah, I think that should be absolutely considered for this stuff. So I think John Donaldson and Dick Allen are the two kind of no doubters. The other guys, you know, there's some interesting names on there, but I think Tommy John's more known for an operation that bears his name than his career, which is sad because he was good. You know, he had a career 3.3 ERA, 25 seasons. He pitched until he was 46.
And 26 seasons.
So obviously, he pitched until like 1989, and he was, obviously the career was prolonged by that surgery, and we know now why that is, and it's only gotten more popular as things have kind of changed in the game and how hard guys throw and how early they're throwing more pitches and harder each time. So I think, I think that he has a career that is overshadowed by the surgery, but that was really good. I don't know if it was Hall of Fame good, but it was really good. I think he had 3.34 ERA, 2.65 in 88 innings in the postseason.
288 wins. I mean, he's there.
Yeah, with the wins, he was right there. He's 12 wins short, and he was runner-up for the Cy Young twice. So good career, really good career. And whether or not it's Hall of Fame worthy, he deserves more recognition than just being known for the guy who was the first guy to have his surgery.
So. Which, it's always so funny. I can't say I totally make a habit of talking about baseball history with a lot of Rockies and players, but you know they don't know their history that well. It would be curious if you took a survey of baseball players, particularly the young ones, if they knew Tommy John was actually a real surgeon.
Yeah, exactly.
Why is it called that? Why is it called that? I don't know.
No, probably not, because it happened 50 years ago. You know, so last 51 now.
Get this. Tommy John surgery right now takes between 60 and 90 minutes, right?
Incredible.
Now, when Dr. Frank Job performed it on Tommy John, it took 4 hours.
Yep.
So think about that. It prolonged his 12-year career into mm-hmm. another 14 years. So after Tommy John surgery, amazing. After getting a him surgery, 14 mm-hmm. more seasons, yep. 164 more wins, and 2,500 plus innings. And Tommy John did once say, I guess probably trying to boost his cause, that those 164 wins that he accumulated after Tommy John surgery was only one less than Sandy Koufax had in his entire career. So to put that in context, a little bit.
He's not wrong. You know, he's not wrong. I mean, Sandy Koufax is the ultimate peak. Peak war guy. So
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this about John Donaldson. So one of those figures, and to go back to that part of the conversation, while we might not have the box scores, we do know that there are tens, if not hundreds, of articles written by noted journalists that weren't bloggers. Blogs didn't exist. That would say, hey, this is one of the greatest pitchers in the game right now.
Baseball is such a numbers-based game, statistical game, but you got to go with what you got, and you got to go with legitimate and reliable sources, right? So if you have those, like you mentioned, legit journalists documenting what he did, that's good enough. That's good enough for me.
So he's credited with 14 no-hitters.
Yeah.
Two perfect games, mm-hmm. dozens of one-hitters. He also had 230 strikeout games.
Incredible.
Extras, man. Or either that or his catcher just passed balls everywhere. 11 games with 25 strikeouts, including two back-to-back 25 strikeouts games. He was credited, apparently, with coming up with the nickname Monarchs for the Kansas Monarchs. And for the Colorado folks out there, one of those no-hitters did come in Julesburg, Colorado on July 16th, 1917. I did find the image from the Denver Post that he did throw that. So that might be something for our Rocky Mountain Saber chapter to go.
That's a great idea.
Up somewhere.
Especially if they vote him in, right? So that's great.
Yeah, I think that was a pretty good one. Yeah, Garvey, as you said, the numbers might not be there. He's almost maybe a modern Gil Hodges, where integral in a lot of championship teams, especially that 84 Padres club. And I found it interesting that Garvey actually serves as a member on a board of the Baseball Assistance Team, a nonprofit organization mm-hmm. dedicated to helping former Major League, Minor League, and Negro League players through financial and medical hardship. So. I think that's pretty neat. And yeah, Dave Parker, he won the very first home run derby, was the NL MVP in 1978, seven all-star game appearances, won three gold gloves in right field. He was mired in that 1980s cocaine drug scandal, was once traded for a guy you wrote a book about.
Yeah.
Dante Bichette.
Right.
Yep. Blake Street Bombers, by the way, if anyone doesn't know, go out and get a copy, especially for the holiday, of Blake Street Bombers. Is there anywhere where, I still have a couple more things to talk with you about, but is there a website or anywhere that people can go and get your book? Not just get the book, but get it and get you to sign it too.
No, just Amazon. If you want me to sign it, I'd be happy to. We can figure out a way to make that happen. Just DM me, and my DMs are open on Twitter at Manny on MLB. It's up here somewhere. Yeah.
And if you're shy and you don't want to do that, you can reach out to me. If you know me, mm-hmm. we'll help navigate that. And
I'd be happy to. And this next year will be the 30th year of the Bombers. 30 years since Coors Field, 30 years since the Bombers were put together. So definitely some more nostalgia probably upcoming for Rockies fans.
I highly recommend people check it out. There's so many things you don't know, including the nickname that they were going to pick before it was the Bombers. Don't give it away. That's why. That's why you got to buy the book. Louis Tiant, also like Dick Allen, recently passed away. He did last 15 years on the Hall of Fame ballot, believe it or not, from 88 to 2002, three All-Star Game selections. So, there's definitely some qualified guys on that list. Now, we've still got about 2 months until we know who's a part of the class of 2025 on the BBWA ballot. That hasn't been released. But four former Rockies could be on the ballot. Two for sure.
Yeah.
Two maybe. Mark Reynolds is a maybe, Ian Desmond, and definitely got to think Carlos Gonzalez and Troy
Cargo Tulowitzki. Cargo and Troy Tulowitzki are definitely going to be on there,
Yeah. Will any of them get the 5% needed to stay on the ballot? That's really
that's tough. I mean,
that feels like the benchmark right now, right, Manny? Like, if you get 5% your first
survive,
and now people start to talk more and go, shoot, you know what? I need to do my research a little bit more on Troy Tulowitzki. Obviously, didn't have the long career, but he had a peak. Again, I don't think he'll get the five, but if you can get five, you have a, you know, I don't know, a 90% better shot than anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be tough. I think for all of those guys, it's going to be tough, to survive in advance. Obviously Tulo and Cargo have the best shot to advance. I think a lot of it depends on the returning names on the list and how clogged the ballot is. We're looking at Billy Wagner, who is so close, and I think he'll get in this time. He finished at 70, just under 74%. You need 75% to be elected. Andrew Jones is, you know, this is going to be his eighth year, but I think he's going to trend toward election. People will be voting for him. A-Rod, I don't know. Carlos Beltran, I think, will eventually get in late in his eligibility. Manny Ramirez is almost done off the list. They might, you know, just looking at the names on here, they might be able to survive just because of the fact that guys will have room on their ballots to vote for more guys than maybe they really think are going to make it to the Hall of Fame. I think in this year, we know that Ichiro has got a great chance to be a first ballot guy, and CeCe Sabathia, I think, has a chance to be first ballot. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I think he's got a chance to be first ballot. It would be a little surprising.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I do want to talk with you a lot more, maybe in a month from now, having a much more deeper conversation. Dustin Pedroia, Ian Kinsler, a couple of names that were
names for sure.
Pedroia, definitely not a first ballot, but he's one of those guys. And that's the thing right now too, with the Hall of Fame. And this is kind of be the last thing that we end on is the Hall of Fame. And really we're talking about BBWA voters, which you and I are both members of the Baseball Writers Association of America. Neither of us have a vote yet. You're past the halfway mark already. You only got
four or so
left until you get your first Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
ballot.
I think I'm in year six or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, I was counting. I'm amped for you. But so it's really the voters almost have to change the parameters of what we consider to be a Hall of Famer, because we were at a period of time in which, sure, you get 300 wins, you're guaranteed in, and then we knew what an exception looked like. Now,
right,
if you get 200 wins, I mean, maybe you got to consider a guy for just getting to 200. We went from a time in which 500 home runs or 3,000 hits was unique. And now 400 homers and at least 2,000 hits are unique. And it's really hard to really pin down, because guys are having shorter careers, retiring early. Buster Posey is a guy where, does he care about the Hall of Fame that much? And I don't mean that in a bad way. Dude retired. He's like, I'm good. I've made enough money. I want to give back to the game. Now the president of baseball operations for the Giants. So, you know, going to be, you know, continue to be a baseball lifer, but a long Hall of Fame baseball career looks so much different right now.
Yeah.
Eyes in the last 20 plus years than it did, I think, ever in the history of baseball.
Yeah. So it's a combination of things, right? There's part of it is you have shorter career. It's just the game has changed, and so have careers. So, yeah. You got to take that into account. Also, I think, look, the Hall of Fame was just too stingy for the longest time. I mean, there are a lot of guys who have real cases. We just talked about, you know, Dick Allen, for example. A lot of guys had real cases. Walker was that guy too, you know, a few years ago, that they absolutely, now Helton, they absolutely could be considered Hall of Famers, but never had a chance because they didn't reach certain round numbers. It just became too much of a, I mean, if 1% of the game's history makes it to the Hall of Fame, that's really, really stingy. I'm not a big Hall guy, but I'm a bigger Hall guy.
Same.
And so I think there are a lot of guys who missed out that should be recognized in the Hall of Fame, should have a plaque there. And that is with this newer generation of voters, as the cycle continues, I think that cohort has made it clear that they are bigger Hall people, and they think that there should be more players represented in the Hall of Fame. Now, sometimes, look, there's the Harold Baines thing where, like, Harold Baines is a great player. I really feel bad that he's going to be that guy, but he's not in my book a Hall of Famer, but he's in the Hall of Fame. So sometimes, because of the way it's system, the way the system is set up with veterans committees and BBWAA and everything else, and how they're voted upon, sometimes guys get in that shouldn't be in there. And then the problem is then they're saying that the bar is lowered. And that argument about the bar being lowered gets confounded with the idea that we're putting guys in the Hall of Fame that belong in there, but can be lumped in with Harold Baines because some people think they don't belong in there. So that's tough. Still a situation. It's better than it's been, man. I mean, you remember, I mean, what, 5 years ago or whatever, when the Walker push was going on, and it was like, there was a stubborn, determination to keep the hall tiny. And
right.
So now it's much more open because of things that have happened, like with Tim Raines and Walker and Helton
and a lot of guys. Ballots. Public ballots is also
and making ballots public. Too. Yeah, absolutely. I think that definitely had an impact.
Where now you're held accountable, not in any mm-hmm. real strong negative way, but just okay. You can't just say no. I don't want to vote for anybody because I didn't like these guys or I didn't watch them or I'm not really a baseball writer anymore, because there are some people out there that still have a BBWA card that from different cities that maybe are more radio guys and never even show up at the ballpark. And, you know, I hadn't thought of this until you just mentioned now, like this younger generation of voters, which, and by younger, we're talking about people that are about 40 years old, but still a younger generation of voters. They saw,
thank you for calling me young
at 40. Yeah.
I'm 41.
But that generation of newer voters, they saw their entire generation of stars wiped off the map and not be considered. That's one of the biggest tragedies that I feel.
Yeah.
That, you know, when I talk about the great players that I enjoyed watching, now all of a sudden, when you want to talk about a Frank Thomas or a McGuire or a Sosa and compare it with a Jimmy Fox or a Mickey Mantle, you go, you know, some old timers might go, yeah, but Mickey Mantle didn't use performance enhancing drugs, and that's the end of the conversation. And that's not fair. You just wiped away all of my childhood in many ways. And no one wants that to happen. So we want to be able to recognize guys. More is way better than less.
I really think that's an awesome point. I never thought about it that way, but it's absolutely true. There is a lived experience from the newer voters, right? That they saw that happen and they don't want it to happen anymore. And that's why they are more willing to really dig into the numbers and see if a guy really has a case. And that's a good thing. I mean, it's a good thing. But even after this, I mean, assuming Dick Allen makes it, I really hope he does. There's still a lot of guys that there's Cooperstown injustice, right? That hasn't been wrongs that haven't been righted. I mean, Kenny Lofton is near the top of that list that just comes to mind, but there are a lot of other guys too, that it's like, okay, we really need. I come across them all the time. Like sometimes I'll be researching something for a story or something, and I'll come across a guy. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Like
Carlos Delgado, one ballot. You're like, really?
Yeah, this guy had a, you know, legitimate, should have gotten a better look. So Andres hopefully Colorado. They continue to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think Jay Jaffe is the one that has like Cooperstown casebook. Mm-hmm. I think they're probably,
he's done a lot for this, by the way. Yeah, he's done so much for this whole push to make the hall, you know, a little bit more equitable.
I think the companion book that maybe I need to write, Cooperstown Crimes.
Think about it.
I think Joe DiMaggio got in on his fourth ballot. You go, that's insane, right? It's Joe DiMaggio.
But that goes to the whole stubborn kind of stingy attitude of
Knights of the Keyboard
back then.
Knights of the Keyboard, as Ted Williams would call us, I guess.
The what?
The Knights of the Keyboard.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, what do you have to do? You know, what do you have to do to be a first ballot Hall of Famer? Do you have to be better than Joe DiMaggio? Three ballots better? I mean, it's kind of crazy to think about that, but it's true.
Yeah, it's wild. Manny, dude, this was a lot of fun.
Always, man.
We kept it under 3 hours. I don't know how we did it. Maybe we left a lot of meat on the bone. We'll have to talk again.
Oh, we'll do it again for
next month. Go ahead and plug away. Let folks know where to get your book and anything else you might be working on.
Sure, Amazon.com. Just type in Blake Street Bombers. The first thing you'll see is the book. At Manny on MLB for Twitter. That's where my stories are. MLB.com, you know, this off season, you know, you should be able to just go there and see a few things. But yeah, it's just kind of transitioning to off season mode now and see, you know, once, I think, like you said earlier, once Soto signs, I think the dominoes will start to fall. yeah, a lot quicker.
And,
so
and get ready for the some more hidden classics. That's going to be
more hidden classics, man. I don't even know what they are, so I'm looking forward to it just as much as you to see what they are.
They're double hidden then. If you don't even know what they are, that's double hidden is must be really good classics and, and maybe ugly classics too. We'll see if
any Rockies games get on there, you can bet that they're going to be ugly. So
I love it. At Patrick D Lyons, at Patrick D Lyons MLB, and at Rockies _ insider. Appreciate you, Manny. Appreciate everyone in the chat jumping in and giving me that momentum. But as I like to say, similar to starting pitchers are concerned. My momentum, it's only as good as my next show. So I'll talk to you then.